Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 1st. Governors laud industry's help during pandemic. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Amidst the global COVID-19 pandemic that has significantly reduced gatherings, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association turned to technology to hold its annual meeting. The association is holding its 58th annual meeting via Zoom over 2 days. Quote, "In tough times, we have to make difficult choices, but we're honored to be with you and honored to have the governors representing both states in the Permian Basin," said Ben Shepard, PBPA president. Quote, "What a difference a year makes," he said. "The last several years have led to record production, record jobs, record opportunities for many people. Today, we're facing a record low rig count and record unemployment," end quote. Governor Greg Abbott, in recorded remarks, said that the Permian Basin, quote, "literally fueled American energy independence and is producers of the key driver behind Texas's success, creating jobs, funding education, roads, and much more," end quote. While this year has brought unprecedented challenges for the state and its energy industry, Abbott said, quote, "the state is strong and its people resilient. We will recover, and the oil and gas industry will power that recovery. Working together, we will build a brighter future for the Permian Basin and the entire state of Texas," end quote. Michelle Lujan Grisham, New Mexico's governor, echoed Abbott's remarks that the energy industry will help fuel economic recovery in her state. Quote, "I want to talk about leadership and how that leadership in and of itself translates into economic recovery and more success, jobs, job growth, job development, and community development," she said. "There's no question all of the above energy, not just in New Mexico, but around the world, will be at the forefront of those innovations and of our economic recovery and our success," end quote. She praised the leadership of the PBPA and New Mexico Oil and Gas Association for their leadership, even before the pandemic and oil market crash, in fostering investment in any number of energy innovations in the state, and for being partners in ensuring resources like fresh water are preserved and maintained. She also cited industry support for transportation infrastructure, broadband, education, and healthcare in New Mexico. Quote, "The PBPA also leaned in to address looming issues in New Mexico, like hunger and poverty," she said. "The PBPA helped think up strategies in addressing and mitigating those issues. You have stepped up and made sure we have a fair and productive regulatory environment," end quote. The PBPA has been involved in helping craft the state's methane emissions strategy, she said, helping New Mexico legislators understand the industry, and also supported the Oil Conservation Division, New Mexico's version of the Railroad Commission, to ensure it had sufficient staff to operate efficiently. Even as the industry was suffering the double blow of the pandemic and the market crash, it stepped up to help. Quote, "Even when times were hard, you contributed to supporting hungry families. You invested in medical residency programs to ensure Texas and New Mexico benefited from more access to primary care. You invested in broadband and public safety. You donated personal protective equipment and hand sanitizer. You leaned in when things were the worst for the oil and gas industry than other industries. You didn't stop working. You didn't stop producing. You didn't stop caring," she said. Average tax bill increases inside city. new fiscal year for most entities starts today. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The average tax bill for residential homesteads inside the city of Midland for the upcoming fiscal year is expected to reach nearly $5,000. That tax levy will be $4,985, which is an increase of $119 year over year, according to statistics provided by the Midland Central Appraisal District. Today is the start of the fiscal year for many government entities. The tax levy is determined by multiplying the taxable value of the residential homestead by the total tax rate, which is made up of the rate from the five taxing entities inside the City of Midland. Those entities are the City of Midland, Midland ISD, Midland County, Midland College, and the Midland County Hospital District. Statistics show that the taxable value of the average residential homestead inside the City of Midland will increase from $280,000 in fiscal year 2019 to $292,000 this coming fiscal year, an increase of more than $11,000, or 4%. Based on individual tax rates from the taxing entities that have been passed and reported to the appraisal district, the total tax rates are $1.73 per $100 valuation for fiscal year 2019 and $1.70 in fiscal year 2020, a decrease of 1.5%. That resulted in average tax levies of $4,800 in fiscal year 2019 and $4,900 in fiscal year 2020. The increase is occurring during a year when some taxing entity leaders said they were placing the tax rates at no revenue rates. But in the case of the county, the hospital district, and college, their total tax rates were higher in fiscal year 2020 than fiscal year 2019. The city's rate is 1.5% lower, and the school district's tax rate dropped the most by 2.2%. In 2020, Midland ISD's tax rate is $1.02 per $100 valuation. That is 60% of the total tax bill. The City of Midland has the second highest tax rate, 35 cents per $100 valuation. That is around three times the size of the next highest taxing entity, Midland County. No new revenue rates promise to bring in as much money as during the previous year. It is not a commitment to keep the tax bill lower than during the previous year. Entities have an estimate of what valuations are going to do in terms of a percentage increase or decrease before tax rates, and therefore tax collections are set. Capital murder warrant issued in shooting death. A capital murder warrant has been issued for a 44-year-old man suspected in the shooting death of a 41-year-old Midland woman, according to a press release from the city spokesperson. Lonnie Burcham remained at Midland Memorial Hospital on Wednesday evening with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head, according to the release. Midland Police Department officers determined that Burcham entered a home in the 3600 block of Story Avenue without the consent of the resident, Brandy Snyder. He was armed when entering the residence and fired at Snyder, causing her death, according to the release. Officers were dispatched to the residence around 2:30 Wednesday morning in reference to a disturbance with weapons. An officer observed the front door of the residence was unsecured, and after identifying himself as a Midland police officer, multiple shots were fired from inside the residence, according to the release. When the officer entered the home, he found the body of a woman, later identified as Snyder, and a man, later identified as Burcham, who was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital. Trademark filing now part of Lee renaming issue. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. A Midland realtor said Wednesday that she has filed for a trademark for Tall City High School as a way to be able to negotiate and the renaming of the Robert E. Lee High School. Kerry McNeil filed with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for a trademark days after the Citizens Renaming Committee narrowed the list of recommendations for the high school's new name down to three. Those three finalists were Tall City High School, Legacy of Equality and Excellence, and Carver Lee High School. The committee picked Legacy of Equality and Excellence as its top choice and Tall City High School as its number two recommendation. McNeil said she hasn't been happy with the way the district has negotiated during the renaming process. The Trademark Office reports that McNeil filed for the trademark September 14th. The trademark will be used for selling Spirit apparel and high school extracurricular merchandise, according to the website. The Trademark Office on Wednesday didn't show any filings for Legacy of Equality and Excellence. McNeil said she is in the third part of a five-step process when it comes to the trademark process. The Lee graduate said that she and other members of the Save Lee Rebels group talked about what they could do to keep Lee in the name of the high school, and the trademark issue came up. However, she said the filing was something she is doing on her own, and hopefully she will be able to use it to negotiate, quote, for a third high school or something down the road, end quote. It would appear the trademark filing could impact the district from a marketing perspective and booster clubs from a fundraising perspective. McNeil said she doesn't plan to use it to make money, but acknowledged that having it will pose a problem for MISD should its leaders choose Tall City High School when it comes to marketing the school and for groups like booster clubs when it comes to fundraising. When asked if the board went ahead with the Tall City High School and the booster club wanted to use Tall City High School in efforts to raise money, she told the reporter Telegram, quote, I think that would go back to my group, end quote. McNeil said Legacy of Equality and Excellence is not her first choice for a new name for Robert E. Lee High School, but she and those she talks with would be okay with the acronym. Quote, we always wanted to come away with some form of Lee, McNeil said. There was so much opposition on the other side that it was an all or nothing, and that's where I think a lot of animosity came from, end quote. She said there are Midlanders who are not happy with the way things have transpired with the Midland ISD board. McNeil said she grew up in Midland, and the community's values are the reason she chose to raise her children here. She said Midland is losing those core values, and there is animosity with what has taken place with the school board. She specifically brought up the purchasing of Ranchland Hills Golf Club and the apartments that the district plans to use for employee housing. The reporter Telegram has reached out to Midland ISD about whether the trademark filing would impact the renaming process. Midland County Sheriff's Office reports man dies in exchange of gunfire. One man died and a second man was injured in a shooting that occurred Tuesday afternoon, according to a press release from Sheriff David Kreiner. Ian Zachary Ramirez, age 26, died after an exchange of gunfire with Gunner Thomas Russo Duffy, age 20, according to the release. Duffy was in stable condition Wednesday at Midland Memorial Hospital. Midland County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to a shots-fired call at 7100 Airline Road at about 2:30 p.m. Tuesday. They found one man was dead, Ramirez, and another man was injured, Duffy. The investigation revealed that Ramirez, armed with a gun, entered the home without consent and threatened Duffy. Exchange of gunfire occurred between the two, according to the release. The investigation continues. Coronavirus cases head toward 200 this week. The Midland Health Department reported Wednesday that the number of new coronavirus cases has increased by nearly 100 week over week. There were 33 new cases reported Wednesday, bringing the total this week to 183. Through 3 days last week, the reported total was 85. This is the third straight week with an increased weekly total through Wednesday. The number of cases has eclipsed 160 for the first time since August 16th through 22nd, and also appears headed above 200 during the week for the first time since August 9th through 15th. Wednesday's new cases are reflective of lab results from Monday and Tuesday, according to the city. The number of cases this week includes the cases at Midland County Jail. The health department also reports 1,284 active cases, an increase of 3 compared to Tuesday, and 2,306 recoveries, an increase of 22. The number of total cases has reached 3,890. The number of COVID-19-related deaths is at 85.
Hello, this is Michael reading an additional article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, October 1st. To Kill a Mockingbird brings MCT safely back to the stage for 75th anniversary, by J.C. Lewis. Midland Community Theater's production of To Kill a Mockingbird brings theater back safely while addressing racial justice issues that are once again in America's spotlight. The play is put on in a reader's theater format, which means actors aren't moving around the stage, but continue to interact throughout the performance. The 90-minute play doesn't have intermissions, but takes viewers on a fast-paced journey of the captivating story. In the director's notes, MCT Executive Director Timothy Jebsen said auditions and rehearsals for the production were underway in March when the pandemic hit. The Reader's Theater format allowed MCT, which is celebrating its 75th anniversary, to put on the show with 19 actors spaced out on stage while following CDC guidelines with social distancing. The special effects help make up for the lack of movement among the actors. The actors have also perfected facial expressions as if they were facing each other in each scene. Jean Lewis Scout Finch, Palin Arthur, carries viewers through the play with her upbeat optimism. For having so many lines, Arthur barely looked at the pages while giving a truly convincing performance that she was Scout. Atticus Finch, David Thomas, has the same passion for equality and justice that was intended for the role. Maude Atkinson, Laura Metzger-Bond, has a perfect Southern accent and helps narrate certain parts, which makes the viewer believe they are in Macon, Alabama. Calpurnia, Kaylee Sims Cochran, brings level-headed wisdom to the stage and continues to be a fierce protector of Scout, Jeremy Jim Finch, Nicholas Ramsey, and Charles Baker Dill Harris, Jude Hunt. The play attempts to bring out the best in people in a small town. In some ways it does, but the villain must pay his dues. Bob Ewell, Kevin Leffler, encapsulates a low-life drunkard who wants to elevate himself by putting down those who are worse off. Mayella Ewell, Delaney Beatty, shows real pain in her performance, but the outlet of that pain is directed at Tom Robinson, Dreyfus Andrews. Robinson loses in the end because of the color of his skin, but his recounting the events makes the audience think maybe he will get the justice he deserves. Each actor pulled their weight during this production, and I wish I could have seen it as originally intended. However, this show is a must-see to support MCT and is a safe way to get back to live theater. This weekend will be the last showing of To Kill a Mockingbird. Showtimes are 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday and 2:30 p.m. Sunday. Tickets can be purchased before the show at the box office because online tickets aren't available.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 1, 2020. Forward progress. The grand opening for Chris Davidson Opportunity Park at Bush Tennis Center, 5700 Briarwood Avenue, is planned for 10 a.m. Saturday. The universally accessible park is on a 3.31-acre tract of land donated by the Henry Foundation. MCPL extends hours of operation. Midland County Public Library business hours will be extended beginning Monday. Both branches will be open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. The branches also will resume some services that had been discontinued because of COVID-19 restrictions, according to a press release from MCPL. Patrons will now have access to printing and copying services at both locations. Faxing is available only at the Centennial branch. Both branches will resume notary services, and proctoring services will be available by appointment only. Curbside checkout services will continue 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. weekday at the downtown branch, and the Bookmobile will continue offering free Wi-Fi and checkouts at locations around town, including Dennis the Menace and C.J. Kelly Parks, Casa de Amigos, and Midland Park Mall. Lions Club to host fundraiser breakfast. Midland Northside Lions Club will host a fundraiser, We Serve Breakfast, 7 to 10 a.m. Saturday at the Midland Park Mall food court. The menu includes sausage biscuits, scrambled eggs, potatoes, cookies, fruit, milk, orange juice, and coffee. Can be takeout, curbside pickup, or dine-in. Participants must wear face masks and practice social distancing. Tickets are $6 each. They are available in advance from club members and at Abacus Computers, Dillard's Customer Service, Pristine Organic Cleaners, and Liberty Tax Service. Door prizes include restaurant gift certificates, a round of golf for four at Green Tree Country Club, and ticket vouchers for entertainment events. GSDSW hosting virtual recruitment. Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest will be hosting online robot building recruitment parties. Girls in grades 4 through 12 can join the online party any Thursday between today and November 19. Girls in kindergarten through 3rd grade can join the online party any Tuesday between October 6 and November 24. The parties begin at 7 p.m. To attend the parties, go to gsdsw.org, click on Robot Building Party, and RSVP today. Girls will receive a Zoom link to join in the party, according to a press release. Girls can join virtual troop meetings for free and join a troop in person at a later date, according to the release. For more information, visit the website. KMB plans cleanup. Keep Midland Beautiful's fall sweep cleanup is Saturday. Groups and individuals can register at keepmidlandbeautiful.org or by calling 688-7745. To be counted in fall sweep, participants' areas must be cleaned up by November 13, according to a press release from KMB. Bubba's 33 to treat veterans, active duty personnel. Bubba's 33 locations in Midland and Odessa will be continuing their tradition of treating veterans and active military personnel to a free lunch on Veterans Day. Those who aren't able to attend in person on November 11 may receive a voucher that will be good through June 30, 2021. Lunch is served 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. The vouchers will be distributed November 11 at a tent in the restaurant's parking lot. Today in Texas history. 1 year ago, a white former Dallas police officer, Amber Geiger, was convicted of murder in the shooting death of her black neighbor, Botham Jean. Geiger said she had mistaken his apartment for hers.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 1st. Kane Marquez, age 37, of Midland, passed away September 27th. Kane was born on November 26, 1982, in Midland, to Amelia Marquez. He is survived by his wife, Rossi Marquez, and their children, Luis Fernando Prado III, Oscar Marquez, Esmeralda Marquez, Semina Marquez, Annalena Marquez, and Isa Marquez, his uncle Raimundo Vargas, and Aunt Mimi Vargas, who were like second parents to him, the siblings Olvido Ramirez, Moses Cantu, Daisy Vargas, Alondra Gamboa, and Raimundo Jr. Vargas. He had numerous aunts, uncles, and many other relatives and friends that loved him so much. Kane is preceded in death by his loving grandmother, Enriqueta Marquez, and his loving mother, Emilia Marquez, and brother-in-law, Joe Ramirez. The family wants to express their deepest gratitude for all who have helped in so many ways. A viewing will be held from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday, October 1st, with a small service from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., and viewing from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Friday, October 2nd, at the branch at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, October 2nd, at Cherry Lane Iglesia de Cristo. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. The family is requesting if you have any Dallas Cowboy gear, please wear for Friday service. A mask is required for all 3 days due to COVID-19. Arrangements are under Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Jean Donnelly, age 99, of Midland, passed away September 29th. There will be a private graveside service at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Funeral Mass will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, October 2nd, at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Survivors include children George A. Art Donnelly, Jan D. O'Neill, and Robert R. Robin Donnelly. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lonnie Jo Long, age 72, of Stanton, passed away on Tuesday, September 29th. No services have been set. Lonnie is survived by his wife, Carlene Long, son, Nathan Long, and daughter, Stacy Hansard. Patricia Marcel Bailey, age 82, of Midland, passed away Saturday, September 26th. Visitation will be Friday, October 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a receiving of friends from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A funeral service is set for Saturday, October 3rd, at 1 p.m. at First Assembly of God. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her husband, George Bailey, 3 sons, David Bailey, Paul Bailey, and Will Bailey, 1 sister, 14 grandchildren, and 4 great-grandchildren.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 1st, 2020. Front page. Bare bones budget kicks into gear. Commissioners set $18 million reserve. By Bob Campbell, B-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. Constrained by the oilfield slump and the pandemic, Ector County commissioners were even more conservative than usual in writing the new fiscal year's budget that takes effect today. The main thing was that we tried to preserve enough cash to continue operating next year, even if the economic recession or the COVID-19 situations persist, Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons said Tuesday. We wanted to make sure we set aside a strong reserve amount, about $18 million, to withstand either a prolonged recession or the effects of a prolonged COVID crisis. Hopefully, we will be able to maintain all operations through next year without having to raise taxes or reduce any staff personnel. With sales tax revenues restricted to financing roads, law enforcement, and illegal dumping enforcement, Simmons said, the new 1.25 cent levy nevertheless made it easier to move money around on the other side of the budget. The court left the property tax rate unchanged at 36.5 cents per $100 valuation and enacted total expenditures of $84,943,109, up from $81,849,488 for the year ended September 30th. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childress confirmed that oilfield anxieties figured heavily into the court's calculations. Everyone is nervous about what the oilfield is going to do, so we made some cuts, turned down some requests, and didn't give any raises, Childress said. Now that the average citizen is living on less, we wanted to beef up the reserve and didn't want to raise taxes. I'm proud of what we did. We held the line the best we could. Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez said the court was concerned about continuing services until the pandemic ends, which he said might take more than 2 years. We wanted to save money and be sure we had enough departments running to serve the public, Rodriguez said. COVID-19 has changed lifestyles and everything else, so we wanted to keep all our employees so they could serve the public on anything they need assistance with. The situation will get tighter and tighter until we get a cure, and I'm afraid something else will pop up by then. By category, here are the revenues and spending schedules from 2019-2020 and totals for the new fiscal year. Revenues budget, $67,446,729, $67,887,979. County Court, $349,384, $342,832. Judge Debbie Hayes makes $119,334. Commissioner's Court, $153,748, $225,461. Commissioner Precinct 1, $97,412, $98,765. Commissioner Precinct 2, $98,670, $98,858. Commissioner Precinct 3, $98,066, $99,482. Commissioner Precinct 4, $99,302, $99,462. Each commissioner makes $60,218. Human Resources, $608,388, $692,825. The director makes $100,593. 70th District Court, $325,028, $331,516. 161st District Court, $316,508, $320,739. 244th District Court, $324,242, $328,359. 358th District Court, $408,636, $408,412. 446th District Court, $315,825, $316,253. The county pays $13,200 of each judge's salary. District Clerk's Office, $1,719,670, $1,608,561. The clerk makes $80,333. District Attorney's Office, $3,610,341, $3,520,214. The county pays $24,280 of the DA's salary. County Court at Law Number 1, $420,076, $419,639. County Court at Law Number 2, $424,931, $424,274. The judges make $152,200. County Clerk's Office, $1,492,223, $1,341,911. The clerk makes $77,233. CTE Chief Passionate About Her Work, by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Executive Director of Career and Technical Education, Carla Byrne, was awarded Professional Employee of the Year at ECISD. Byrne has been in education for 22 years, with 8 of those as an administrator. Even after 23 years of service to Ector County ISD, Executive Director of Career and Technical Education Carla Byrne was still shocked that she was chosen as the Professional Employee of the Year for the district. "I'm really honored. I was really taken by surprise," Byrne said. There are so many wonderful people doing great things here in ECISD, so it didn't really even cross my mind as a possibility. You just don't think about it, and then you get the call, and it's awesome. An Odessa native, Byrne earned a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's in education counseling, both from University of Texas Permian Basin. You have to teach for 2 years before you can become a counselor, which was something she always wanted to be. Starting off as a special education teacher and working her way through the teaching and counseling fields, Byrne seems to have found her niche in CTE. This is her 10th year as executive director of CTE, and you can see her passion when she talks about it. Under her leadership, the program has seen a 132% increase in enrollment and a 1,000% increase in dual credit. One of our programs I'm probably the most proud of is our LVN, Licensed Vocational Nurse, program. There are just two in the state, so our kids graduate, and the summer they take the NCLEX for the LVN, and so it's a really awesome program for our kids. Being a counselor, she said, helped her become a better administrator. I think one of the best traits an administrator can have is just to listen, so I try really hard to always listen to teachers and parents and colleagues, Byrne said. As head of CTE, Byrne oversees 80 to 90 people. The folks that are housed at the high schools, their direct supervisors are the high school principals, so I oversee the programs. Then I oversee directly the teachers at the four satellite campuses, Frost Tech, the CTE side of New Tech, the Agriculture Farm, and Sewell Auto Tech. There are 14 different career pathways out of a possible 16. Two pathways aren't offered by ECISD. Our enrollment is about 8,500 kids, which is more than our high school enrollment, so that's duplicative because we have a lot of kids that are enrolled in engineering, but then they're also taking a business English class or a financial math class, for example, Byrne said. The programs offered are aligned to the target occupations list developed by the Permian Basin Workforce Development Board. They're all relevant to the committee, so our kids graduate workforce ready, and they can go right to work here, which is what we want, because with the cost of living being so high here, it's hard to recruit folks to come to Odessa, Byrne said. We really are passionate about growing our own. We've got a lot of capable, bright kids right here at our fingertips, so it's important that we educate them in these pathways so that they can support themselves. Byrne said that there are so many things she enjoys about career and technical education. I think CTE is just kind of a big family. We're just really close-knit and support one another, but programmatically, sometimes I miss counseling and getting to work with students individually. But being able to effect change at the programmatic level is a larger scale, so I love that. I love to sit around the table with Odessa College colleagues and talk about what else we can add, what makes sense, Byrne said. She added that the LVN program came out of that collaboration. Byrne is in her ninth year on the Workforce Development Board. Another gratifying part about her job is getting to see students that finally find a niche that keeps them in school and come out of their shell. They want to work. They want to work with their hands, and we need workers, so it's really win-win for kids and our community, Byrne said. She added that it's a misconception that CTE is not a college-based program. We partner with Odessa College for dual credit, including welding and auto tech, so our kids sometimes don't even know that they're about to embark upon a dual credit opportunity. The CTE department covers tuition and textbooks for our kids, so we say we're glad you're here and you can be in this program. Do you want to take it for dual credit? So there's that option there. If you don't want to, then you can just take it non-dual. So our kids are actually graduating with large numbers of college credit hours. We actually have a CTE-based early college high school here called OCTechs, O-C-T-E-C-H-S. So our kids are graduating with associate degrees in career tech fields, which is really cool, Burns said. Dr. Lilia Nanez, Assistant Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, said there are not enough words to express how wonderful Burn is. First, her knowledge of career and technical education is second to none. Her knowledge of all our pathways is exceptional. She communicates clearly with our community and the Workforce Commission in order to provide and bring innovative courses and focuses on courses and trades needed in Odessa. It is that connection to our community that becomes her compass regarding what we need in the Permian Basin. She listens. In fact, she is working toward expanding our courses and pathways to include HVAC, plumbing, paralegal, hospitality and tourism, and court reporting, Nanez said in an email. She also knows how to adapt our limited facilities to somehow make things work. She was able to budget for facilities modifications in order to serve more students. Prior to the OC Sewell Auto Tech facility being completed, she was able to work with operations in order to adjust the Frost building with separated spaces for Auto Tech, and now is leveraging the Auto Tech space for additional welding labs. She is a thinker and makes things happen. But the most wonderful and exceptional trait Carla has is her passion for her students. She cares for every single student we serve in CTE. She goes the extra mile by organizing her team for home visits and house calls in order to find and serve the students appropriately. The greatest advocate for students in college career and military readiness, that is Carla Byrne. I have the utmost respect for her, and I am honored to know and work with such a marvelous educator and leader, Nanez added. Byrne and her husband Chris have a 13-year-old daughter, Delaney. Executive Director of ECISD's Career and Technical Education, Carla Byrne talks about the impact that helping students graduate high school and be workforce ready has on the Permian Basin economy. Ben Powell, Odessa American. ECISD homepage, HectorCountyISD.org. Welcome home. The Dominguez family cuts the ribbon presented by the Odessa Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday afternoon during their Habitat for Humanity house dedication. The Dominguezes are the recipients of the 165th home built by Midland Habitat for Humanity. Eli Hartman, Odessa American. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,905. Ector County negative, 22,835 out of 28,051 tested, with 311 pending, 99 deaths. Recovered, 4,163. Active, 643. ECISD daily cases, 5 students, 1 staff. Midland County, 3,857 confirmed, 85 deaths. Texas, 748,967 confirmed, with 6,237,157 tested. Total Texas deaths, 15,711. U.S. cases, 7,168,077 total confirmed, and 205,372 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6ntptuq. Quick hits. Pink the Basin. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Pink the Basin's annual luncheon and most of the large gathering third-party fundraisers have been canceled. Those events made up 90% of last year's annual income. To continue offering diagnostic breast cancer services, PTB is requesting support or participation in the following Pinking the Basin campaigns. October, Run for the Basin, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Wear pink athletic gear throughout October. Donate a set amount or an amount for every mile you run at https://bit.ly/runforthebasin. Proceeds will provide women in the Permian Basin with breast cancer screening services. Share pictures with on Facebook and Instagram using #RunForTheBasin and #PinkingTheBasin. Also, throughout October, EF Outfitters, 100% of pink candle sales benefit Pink the Basin. And 516 Candles Texas, 20% of all October sales benefit Pink the Basin. Today through October 15th, Texas Roadhouse Odessa. Receive a free appetizer when you make a $5 donation. On October 14th, Pink the Basin receives 10% of sales. October 10th, second RSS Ride for Tatas Motorcycle Breast Cancer Awareness Run. October 12th, Sewell Leader Live with Margaret Feinberg. Free live stream event titled Fight Back with Joy. October 12th through 17th, Press Cafe Dine to Donate Week. All meals are free in exchange for a donation. October 24th, Pink Warrior 5K Walk Run. November 8th, 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., private shopping event. Raffle prizes every 15 minutes. Partial proceeds benefit Pink the Basin. To donate, get help, or for more information, visit pinkthebasin.com. Scarecrow Decorating Contest. The Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Decorate the Scarecrow Contest, October 1st through 23rd. Kids, middle grade children, teens, and adults are invited to decorate a scarecrow like their favorite book character. Participants may drop off their decorated scarecrow entries October 1st through 23rd at the library. Entry forms and patterns are available on the third floor. Entry deadline is noon, October 23rd. Final judging will be conducted on the same day. Contest rules are: scarecrows should represent a favorite book character. On the entry form, the title and author of the book must be included. Do not write your name anywhere on your scarecrow. Entry form number will be recorded with participant's name when scarecrow is entered by returning it to the children's department on the third floor. All designs must be family friendly. This is a home project. Design size is limited to the size of the pattern, and use products to decorate that are safe for everyone. Scarecrows will be judged according to the following categories, and prizes will be awarded in each category. Kids, ages 4 through 7, middle grade, 8 through 12, teens, 13 through 18, and adults, 18 plus. Winners will be announced live on an Ector County Facebook event at 4 p.m. October 26th. All scarecrows must be picked up by November 2nd. For more information, call 332-2118 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Local News Roundup. Mother, daughter charged with poisoning neighbor's dogs. An 18-year-old woman and her 44-year-old mother were arrested after they reportedly poisoned their neighbor's dogs. Alexis Briones, 18, and Joanne Briones, 44, were each charged with two counts of cruelty to animals, poison, a third-degree felony. Odessa Police Department officers and members of Odessa Animal Control were called to the 1400 block of Alamosa Street on August 23rd, an OPD probable cause affidavit detailed. The complainant, who was identified in the police report as 31-year-old Edward Paul Toms, reportedly told officers that his two dogs had been poisoned. Toms stated his two dogs were found eating a meaty substance with green sprinkles behind his residence. The affidavit stated, Toms stated his dogs became sick. Security video of the alleys showed Alexis Briones approached the rear of Toms' residence, withdrew a pellet gun from her waist, and fired five shots at his dogs, the affidavit detailed. Briones and her mother walked to the back gate of Toms' residence, and Briones is seen holding an object comparable to a bowl, and they knelt behind the fence. Further video reportedly shows no other people in the alley during or after the event until Toms discovered his dogs. The green substance on the meat was tested at the Texas A&M Veterinary Medical Diagnostic Laboratory, and it tested positive for bromethylene, which is a poison used on rodents. Alexis Briones and Joanne Briones were arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Tuesday, jail records show. Each had two bonds totaling $20,000, and both posted bail later that day. Man dies following motorcycle collision last week. The 60-year-old Sulphur Springs motorcyclist who was involved in a two-vehicle collision last week died on Tuesday. Charles Belcher was transported to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries on September 21st, and he was pronounced dead by medical personnel on Tuesday, an Odessa Police Department press release detailed. Belcher's next of kin have been notified, and the investigation continues. The reported collision happened at 5:20 p.m., September 21st, in the 4000 block of East 42nd Street, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that David Crossan, 60, of Wyoming, was driving a black GMC Sierra and was stopped facing west for construction in the 4000 block of East 42nd Street. Belcher was driving a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, the press release stated. Belcher was traveling west in the 4000 block of East 42nd Street and collided with the back of the GMC Sierra. Man charged with punching, slapping pregnant girlfriend. A 28-year-old man was arrested after he was accused of punching, slapping, and dragging his girlfriend, who was 8 months pregnant at the time, by the hair, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. Justin Alvarado was charged with assault on a pregnant individual, family violence, a third-degree felony. OPD responded to an assault victim, identified as Miera Shatori, on August 8th at Ashford Odessa Square Apartments, located at 222 North Dixie Boulevard, the affidavit stated. Shatori reportedly told officers that her boyfriend, Alvarado, assaulted her on August 8th at the Wildwood Apartments, located at 2201 Westwood Drive. Shatori stated Alvarado punched and slapped her multiple times over the face, left arm, and left leg, the affidavit stated. Alvarado grabbed Shatori by the hair and dragged her through the apartment. Shatori reportedly had multiple bruises, which was consistent with being struck on the face, left arm, and left leg. Shatori stated she was 8 months pregnant with Alvarado's daughter. Alvarado was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Monday, jail records show. He had one bond, totaling $20,000, and posted bail on Tuesday. OA News at OAOA.com. Steward Medical Group welcomes new vascular surgeon. OA News at OAOA.com. Odessa Regional Medical Center and Steward Medical Group announced Tuesday that vascular surgeon Dr. Hao M. Wu has joined the hospital. Wu treats a wide spectrum of vascular diseases using minimally invasive endovascular and traditional surgical approaches. He specializes in medical and surgical care for those with routine and complex vascular diseases, including DVT, aortic aneurysms, carotid disease, and more, a news release said. He has advanced training in vascular surgery. He completed a fellowship at the University of British Columbia and completed his residency at the University of Calgary. He has experience in minimal invasive treatment of peripheral artery disease and special interest in treating patients with critical limb ischemia, the release said. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 1st, 2020. Page 2, read. WNPAC sets cinema under the stars. OA News at OAOA.com. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center is hosting Cinema Under the Stars. The Halloween double feature is Hocus Pocus at 8 p.m. and at 11 p.m., the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Both are on October 29th. Free popcorn will be provided by Complex Community Federal Credit Union. Partial proceeds from the Rocky Horror Picture Show will benefit the Ham Hocks of Midland Community Theater. There will be a costume contest. Costumes must depict the movies being shown. Movie-themed specialty cocktails, free popcorn while supplies last, a photo booth, and prop bags available to purchase for use during the Rocky Horror screening. For additional guidelines, visit WagnerNoel.com. Face masks that cover your nose and mouth are required to be worn at all times while in the venue for guests ages 10 or older, unless you are actively eating or drinking. Tickets for Cinema Under the Stars are $5, and each movie will be sold separately with assigned seating to allow for social distancing. You can purchase tickets for each movie screening and will have to choose your seats each time, meaning it will be first come, first served, and having the same seats for each movie is not guaranteed. UTPB recognized by U.S. News, OA News at OAOA.com. The University of Texas Permian Basin is once again being recognized by U.S. World News and Report as one of the best universities in the nation for social mobility, ranked as a top public school, and recognized as one of the best regional universities. Social mobility, according to U.S. News and World Report, is a university's success at enrolling disadvantaged students who are awarded with Pell Grants. A majority of students who receive the federal funding come from households where the gross incomes are under $50,000. 85% of UTPB students receive need-based aid. UTPB has also jumped 10 spots from last year in the rankings for top public schools, which includes criteria such as offering discounted tuition to students who reside in Texas and research opportunities. In addition, UTPB jumped 14 spots from the previous year for Regional Universities West. This category includes universities that offer a full range of undergraduate programs and master's programs. Each of these rankings is based on tuition, graduation and retention rates, debt, and financial aid. These honors highlight what is special about UTPB and the value of a high-quality university committed to serving students from diverse backgrounds. On the net, tinyurl.com/YAD8VMAA. tinyurl.com/YA2PMPZ2. Page A9, local and state. Annual college night moves online for 2020. OA News at OAOA.com. Each year, Ector County ISD's secondary counselors organize college night, which draws hundreds of students and their families to come and chat with college recruiters. Not this year. COVID restrictions will make it difficult to do an event of this size safely, so ECISD College Night is moving online. The event will be from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. October 7th. ECISD students can log in and chat virtually with as many as 300 college recruiters about everything from admissions standards to fields of study to financial aid. Students will be receiving information on how to attend from their teachers and counselors. Login information can also be found on the ECISD homepage under Headlines. ECISD College Night focuses on students in 8th through 12th grade and their parents to give them a chance to explore college and university options available after high school. Register online at tinyurl.com/y2kjuh88. That's tinyurl.com/y2kjuh88. Supporting the Blue. IHOP recently delivered pancakes and coffee to the Odessa Police Department. Courtesy photos.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.